coming to you from sunny Orlando, Florida. Welcome to the Paper Stack Podcast, where we cover current topics in the note industry, give you tactics for your note business, and talk with industry leaders to make you a better note investor. And now, your hosts, Brett Berkey and Rick Allen.
Welcome back to the Paper Stack Podcast. My name is Rick Allen. This is Brett Berkey, and we are here for another edition of the My First Note series. I'm really excited about this one. We've got Chris Sevigny here today. I love Chris. You always know what you're getting. There's no sugarcoating. I could literally sit with Chris the whole time and hang out at the conference and just listen to him talk. Chris, thanks for coming on the show, man. Appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks for having me today. Glad to be here. And as mentioned, pre-recording, a little fired up today, so I'm ready to rock and roll.
What's got you fired up today? Who was it?
Oh, man. So fired up today is, I got several things. One is my love-hate affair with attorneys.
Always.
That we all have in this space, and getting them to just do what I ask, please, just do what I ask, is one. And then the other is accountants who can't count. That's another one that kind of gets me fired up. Don't know how to pay a bill. Can't tell you how much you owe them. Bread and butter type
business stuff. Business stuff.
So.
Yeah, I think the love-hate relationship with attorneys just runs. It runs deep. I tell people, it's just tell them, do your damn job. I don't want to do the job for you. You went to school. You have the license. You passed the bar. Just trust me. Just do this. You should know this. I feel your pain. So today, Brett, what are we doing? First note?
The first note series. I'd like to know when and how you got into the space. Were you in real estate prior? I know a little bit about your background, but understanding how did you transition from where you were, whatever you were doing before, to getting into notes, and then what made you stay? That whole process is really cool. A lot of people like to know that. Fire away. Tell us how it started.
I blame my wife for getting into notes. So really? It is absolutely 100% her fault. And the reason behind that is I've been in real estate for 25 years. And back in 2013, when we built our primary residence, we acted as a general contractor on it, which was a trip, but I had the experience on it. And if you have that experience, it's fun. If you don't have that experience, you'll end up looking like Rick with no hair on your head. But so after that, though, it was perfect timing. 2013, we had a ton of equity in the property and we saved 25% just acting as the GC. We took a line of credit and started doing some local, not fix and flips, but rehabbing properties to hold as rentals. We also had two kids at the time, so it was challenging on the weekends spending it, you know, time at the properties. And after the second one, Diana, my wife, looked at me and she said, "Hey, yeah, we're done, no more." So I just sulked, put my head down, went in a corner, cried for a little bit, and was thinking about what else I could do. And that's where I stumbled upon notes. And I was pissed off the first time I found out about it, because I had been in real estate for 20 years at the time. And I heard of private lending, but I didn't realize you could buy distressed notes on the secondary market. And this whole little niche hidden world existed. So I did research, did analysis, engineering me, overanalyze everything possible. And what I loved about the business was the fact that you can do it anytime, any place, anywhere. And my wife went to bed at 9 or 10 o'clock at night. I used to call myself the midnight to two investor, where I'd work the W-2 job. And then at night, review tapes, put bids in, do due diligence. And yeah, it took me about 6 months of hardcore studying before I bought my first notes.
Cool.
Where did you find it?
Paul Burkett.
Paul Burkett. Really?
Paul Burkett, yep, put out a tape, Automation Finance. And I was using my solo 401k at the time, and I bought 4 loans. Rough numbers, each loan cost like $5,000 or $6,000. They were all low PB of, you know, $8,000, $10,000, $12,000. One was performing, one was in bankruptcy, and one was like in foreclosure and default. So I figured, okay, if I can throw 25 grand at this and I lose it, but chances of losing on every single loan, it probably wasn't going to happen, because I was pretty confident and I knew enough to get myself in trouble and not lose everything. And yeah, so that was the first go around. And like most people who get into this space understand and realize, it doesn't matter how much videos you watch or education you get, whether you're skiing or golfing, until you get actually go do it, it's a completely different animal and a different feel.
Everyone says that.
It's the same. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll ask you for your piece of advice at the end, which we didn't ask me, but we'll ask you.
Yeah.
But so you bought 4 loans at your first run through.
Yep.
And
yep.
How did they go? What happened? Did you jump into it? Like, I got servicers, the whole deal, or like you, the engineer, and you probably had the whole plan set up.
I did, and I made a boatload of mistakes. For example, I used a collateral storage company that went through and they'd analyze all the collateral. And next thing I know, I got like a $1,200 bill. And I'm like, what is this? There's an exceptions list, and we charge $100 per exception. I'm like, what's that mean? It's like, for us to put it on a list, meaning like this is missing, and costs $100. I'm like, oh, so that includes fixing it as well. And they're like, oh, no. I'm like, so you're charging me $100 just to put it on a spreadsheet? And they're like, yes. I'm like, great. Thank you for, I don't need my colonoscopy for the month. So that was like one mistake I made. People don't know me. I tend to be a little aggressive and a little hyper. So I want things done in an immediate fashion. And the note space wasn't like that. Servicers didn't appreciate that early on. I've toned down a lot. So I'm very calm now compared to what I used to be. I'm sure you guys could attest to that. You laugh at that, Brett. So some of the other mistakes of just not knowing, and really, instead of asking the question, I was trying to be the bull in the china shop and trying to force the issues on things. Those loans actually all turned out fairly well. One of them basically made it through bankruptcy. One of them was non-performing that we foreclosed on, and it sold at foreclosure. And then one of the other ones was performing. And the fourth one, I didn't make pretty much any money on, because it was one of those payers that would pay 1 month and miss 2 months and make a payment. So your servicing costs basically ate up money coming in the door. So I'm like, point, don't buy loans with a principal and interest of $100 per month or $150, because if they go non-performing, you're basically not going to make any money on it.
Yeah.
That's good advice.
That is good advice. That's any other mistakes you're like, oof, I wish I wouldn't have done that.
We had on the one of them that went to foreclosure, the borrower started, they basically started to contest it. And I came from a background of general contractor, which is pretty conflict oriented. But because it was my first foreclosure, I got like cold feet, and oh my God, like they're fighting back, and they make these claims that are just so outrageous as part of their defense. And I took it like, oh my God, they're coming back and we could be wrong here and all these other things, and didn't trust what my attorney was saying, and was like, oh, we're going to have to try and settle. We'll have to do this. We'll have to do that. So I spent a lot of time trying to work something out where there really was nothing to work out. And I should have, honestly, and it's funny because we just talked about the love-hate relationship with attorneys. Here's the love side of things of, you know, a lot of times, listen to your attorney.
Yeah.
And I did, but didn't. And I was scared. I got scared once they stepped into the ring, because I thought it would basically be, okay, could basically go through this. They're behind. It's a slam dunk. And once they start throwing spaghetti at the wall, you start second guessing yourself.
And it's, yeah, because the repercussions of losing are, you're like, what if we lose? Even if you have a slam dunk case, I know.
Yep.
I don't know where that asset was, but there was a few attorneys here in Florida that were just notorious pain in the ass defense attorneys, that they would do everything. And I remember there was one time I wrote a check for 10 grand to settle it and just say, here, I'll give you a deed in lieu for 10 grand. Cause they were trying to, they wanted me to bring the owner of, it was FCI, to verify the pay history. They called him as a witness. And he was like, it's going to cost $3,000 for me to get there. That's my hourly, or that's the trip. Plus, you got to pay for tickets. Plus, you got to pay for room and board. And I go, plus I'm paying for attorneys. And I just started adding up the numbers. I'm like, how about I write you a check for $10,000 and you sign the house over? And because I was going to spend the money anyways, one way or the other. So how long did it take you to move through those first four?
About a year.
A year? Did you buy other assets in the meantime, or did you wait for those first four to run its course and then be like, okay, let's go?
So I did not wait till they ran their course. Once like a few of them started paying and I'm like, okay, I think I got the hang of this. In between, so I bought these in like October 2017. Unfortunately, my father passed away in February of 2018. So between February and July, I took a little bit of breather from trying to grow that note side of things. But then back in July and August, I started getting comfortable buying a little more. And then I also, at the point in time, was taking seeing some of these online webinars, and I'm like, okay, how could I try and get some other money involved in this? So what I did was, the person who was doing these webinars would always share the invite list. Oh, here's a list of everyone attending. So what I did is I took that list and just sent out an email to people and said, hey, look, this is not as passive as you think, but if you want to be passive, hey, I'm interested in doing a joint venture deal with you. And you know, most JV deals, it's 50-50 split. I'll give you 60% on the deal. And I had probably 10 people out of like 100 people who were on reached out to me and say, yeah, I don't have the time for this. I'm definitely interested. Let's talk. And then I probably picked up like 5 JV deals right off the bat of—
They put the money in, you did all the work?
I did all the work and I gave them 60% of the profit versus most people do 50-50. So I'm thinking, and this is another tidbit for people, when you're just getting started, if everybody's given 50-50 and somebody's done 100 deals and you've done 1 or 2 or 5 or 10, what is your competitive advantage? You don't have one.
No.
But all of a sudden, if you give away more of the farm, and I can tell you once you do that, after doing 1 or 2 deals with people, say, hey, look, now that we've done a few, I'm going to go to 50-50. That's what I did. After a certain period of time, I'm like, hey, look, after the first few deals, it's an intro rate for you, but later on, do 50-50. That's what I did.
And people are probably super happy with it. Whatever. Yeah, 50-50 is fine. I'm making money and I'm not doing anything. I got somebody I trust. We've got history together now. Yeah, that's
pretty cool. A lot of those people still with you?
Yeah. So eventually we grew where at one point in time I had 40 JV partners and then I have 70 partials at one point in time. And then each one of those like running a separate company while I was working full time. So that's what got me into starting to do funds. So that's where... And I reached out to them and did the first I did was a 506B. And I just took all my JV partners and said, hey, look, one deal you made 25%. The next deal you only made 12% or whatever it was. You know, you've got all this because you're relying on one deal.
Right.
How about we, you know, I go to people I work with. Let's pool it all together and you'll get basically.
You just spread your risk.
Spread out your risk. That's what we did. Literally, I had my attorney draft documents like 6 months in advance just to have them. And then John Keith with Direct Source put out a tape of 90 CFDs. And I joked at the time with Gail Greenberg, I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to go buy these. Let's go raise $1 million and let's just go buy these. And she laughed at me. And I reached out to everyone and said, hey, look, here are the assets. Here's what the numbers look like. And if we can get to $1 million, we'll pull the trigger on these and raise $1 million in 2 weeks and bought those 90 assets and threw them in my first fund.
And that was it. Just that's how you got started moving from...
Yep.
Literally from 4 loans in 2017 to when did you do that?
That was in 2019.
That is so fast.
2018, I grew. So the latter part of 2018, when I started doing those JVs, I had got up to 40 or 50 notes.
Yeah.
So 2017, I bought the 4. 2018, I got 20 or 2018, beginning of 2019, I have 50 plus notes under my belt. And then this deal came up and basically was, one of the things that I think helped us was at the time I started doing the podcast, which the podcast was really just sharing the stories of all these crazy note stories and people just enjoyed it. But people also understood that I like to think I'm a straight shooter and good, bad, or indifferent, you know what you're getting from me. I try not to have things get misinterpreted. I'd like to think you always know where you stand. And we had deals that didn't go well. And I was upfront with them. Hey, this one's not going well. Here's how I'm going to try and resolve it and work it out. We would.
So when did you make the jump to be full-time just notes? Was that?
A year ago?
Wow, okay.
It was only a year ago.
Wow.
Yeah, so I was running at one point in time. When I was doing this all by myself, I had over 200 loans in my portfolio that I was managing myself. And that's how I met Lauren Wells, who's now my business partner in my latest fund. At the time, she reached out to me and she was on leave because she just had her second child and was getting interested in notes. And Shante Duffy, they had connected and said, hey, you should talk to Chris Seveny. And so I started speaking with her and giving her advice on, she was buying some firsts and stuff. And eventually I needed some help and got a good relationship with her and said, hey, why don't you just come work for me part-time and you flexible hours, stay at home and stuff. And she's like, yeah. And then I got to learn to know more about her and she's got a sales background and everything else. And then once we started closing out some of these funds and I was looking at, did very well with them, and was looking to leave my full-time job. Basically, we started in what year are we in October of 2021. I put the plan in place to leave my job in the summer of 2022. And we started getting all our fund documents together and everything else going. And basically in January, her and I reached a deal for her to come on board full time in April for me. So she started basically in April for me full time while I was still closing out my full time job, which I left last summer.
Wow. That's good. And so now you guys have, how many funds do you have going? Just one?
So right now, we just got the one we got the Regulation A. And we have a Reg D component with it. So it's one entity that has two avenues to invest.
What did you think of the Reg A process? Will you do another one?
I would, actually, now that we've got one done. So we just renewed. You don't know what you don't know with it. So I watched a lot of videos online about it, and we put a team in place. I had the broker dealer. We have the escrow. We put a lot of the people in place. Which they were great at the start. It's painful. I mean, you're going to spend $100,000 easy putting this thing together. People give an idea. What it does allow you to do is get money from accredited and non-accredited. But, you know, where we started to where we are today, we swapped out a lot of our initial team members. For example, our broker dealer kept us compliant. And basically what that means is they would review our ads and everything to make sure we're not promising returns or guarantees. They don't help raise money. We have a broker dealer now where Lauren's actually at a conference today speaking to a bunch of broker dealers who are working with us to raise money from institutional and family offices. So it's just a different, as you get to
same title, but you swapped out the job responsibilities. Now it's
exactly.
Yeah. That's, and that's key. And that's when we did our regulation, we didn't have the broker dealer. We went the pay-per-click. And we had planned on doing that, but we launched, and I think 2 months later, COVID hit, and you weren't allowed to go talk to anybody.
Yeah.
And so it shot a hole in the boat right out of the marina. But that's cool. So you guys so you would do another one. So you have the Reg D and you have the Reg A.
Reg A.
The regulation, having the Regulation A, is you can then funnel people into the Reg D, I assume.
Yeah, so the reason we did the Reg D is when we're working now with registered investment advisors, their clients are all mostly accredited.
Yeah.
And for compliance for them, kind of due diligence is, hey, I can put you in the Reg D because it's more restrictive and you're an accredited investor.
Correct.
So we set that specifically up for them. And that has a Regulation A, our minimum is only $5,000. Our Regulation D minimum is $100,000. Completely different audience.
Yeah.
What we found with the Reg A is we started out with a minimum of $500 and then kept increasing it. We've had people start with that minimum and then get to know us and see, oh, is this legit? And then turn around and cut us a check for $100,000 or $250,000.
Wow.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I will say your marketing's on point. Well, if you're watching this, go to his website and find out. Just show up and he'll track you everywhere.
You'll have dreams about us. You click on that link and...
How did I get 70 investments tattooed on my arm? You guys are everywhere. No, that's cool, man. That's good.
Well, that's good stuff.
Yeah, what's the name of the fund?
It's CWS Investments. It's podcast is Creating Wealth Simplified. We just took the initials from that. Everything's branded under the 7E because that's what we've built our reputation on. And it's, I think one thing that people get so hung up on in business is like the name of your company or the name of your fund. It's like nobody ever looks at the name of the fund. The name of your company or what you brand under is what you want to do. PaperStack. Everybody knows PaperStack, but we have subsidiaries that are part of it. Nobody knows the names of those. Everyone knows PaperStack. Like for me, everyone knows the 7E, which I still enjoy getting the questions of people like a week, month later going, I get why you got the 7 in the E now. So.
I had that epiphany too. At one point, I can't remember when it was. I think I was talking with Jamie and he explained it because I kept saying Savini or something like that. I kept messing. He's like, no, just like his logo, 7E. And I was like, I get it. So cool.
Yes. Before we close, what advice would you give to somebody who is thinking about getting notes when they're going to go try to buy their first note or something about buying their first note?
Oh, wow. How much time do we have with this one? I'll tell you what the mistakes that I see in some of the ones that I made is, I'll call it top three mistakes. Bid on assets that you want to buy and try and close on. Just don't bid, get under agreement, and then 3 weeks later, basically, yep, I'm not closing on that one because of I don't like the color of the mailbox. No, not going to sit well with the seller on that. This is a very small space and your reputation is everything within this space. With that being said, so you make sure you don't want to burn bridges. I've done that in the past with a company. And then the other big thing I'll mention to people is you have to manage your vendors. You have to manage your servicer, stay on top of them. Everyone likes, when I was a kid, and I still do, put attorneys on pedestals because they've got education up the yin yang. They're super smart people, but they still need to be managed. We all put our socks on, shirts on the same way every day. So they're humans just like us. They make mistakes. So understand that. And then the last component I'll say is understand that sometimes things may cost more and there's nobody but to blame. It's just, that's business. Sometimes an attorney missed the fact that the person's deceased and they had to name the heirs and they missed an heir. You can't blame the attorney and go back to the attorney and say, okay, you're going to pay for this. And an instance recently where an attorney sent me something, said, hey, it's going to be an extra $300 to file an extension because we didn't file this in time. And I basically, 5 years ago, I would have been like, why am I paying for this? And gone after him. And so I just asked a question. I'm like, can I get an understanding of why we weren't able to file in time? So if it's something on my end or my team, we can correct it. The attorney basically stepped back and said, it's a judgment, which we can talk about, but it was a judgment case where this is my first time doing one of these. And so I was just taking a little bit longer and I lost track of time. And I was like, cool. I'm like, hey, can we just make sure it doesn't happen again? But I completely understand.
Yeah. That's good, man. I would say that I was in that same boat. I was telling Brett earlier on is like, I came from the real estate investment flip wholesale where things happen really quickly and I expected it like this. And so I had to temper myself on how long things took. And with that understanding, the longer you're in the business, the more kind of maturity you get, you understand, hey, it's a complicated business. There's a lot of moving parts. Shit's going to happen. You have to roll with, and you can't really do anything. What's the alternative? No, we're not going to file. We're not going to pay the $300. It's okay. Yeah. It is what it is. Yeah. Okay. I guess we have to move forward. You learn that. I don't know. I'm tempted. Do we want to try to go into the judgment?
I almost want to save that for a separate podcast. Even if we just stop this one and do another one, because it's a totally different subject matter.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I got 20 minutes. You want to go through it?
We'll just do it another
happy
one.
To.
All right. That's it for this edition of the Paper Stack Podcast. Chris 70, not Seven or Savini. It's Chris 70 and his story on his first note. It was great. Fantastic. First notes. So we appreciate you coming on. Looking forward to the next one, which is coming right up.
Cool.
See ya.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Are you new to the mortgage note industry? Have you been wanting to learn the step-by-step process to purchase your first mortgage note? Well, you're in luck. We've convinced our CEO, Rick Allen, to break down everything he knows about mortgage note investing. Through a series of 50 videos, you'll get everything from start to finish of where to purchase notes, how to purchase notes, and all of Rick's investing techniques he has developed over the many years. From performing note tactics to non-performing notes, Rick gives you everything he knows about investing. Bonuses include our glossary of industry terms, Rick's own proprietary calculators he created to evaluate notes, discounts from our partners, our Rolodex of vendors, a private Facebook group, along with a lot more. We've packed so much content into the Academy to take you from beginner to expert in no time. To learn more about the Academy, go to academy.paperstack.com/welcome. Again, that is academy.paperstack.com/welcome.